Hello, everybody. My name is Andy Fernandez.
And my name is Michael Fernandez.
And welcome back to another episode of What Makes It Great. Today, we are talking about another movie from 1953, From Here to Eternity, directed by Fred Zinnemann, ranked number 52 on the American Film Institute's list of the top 100 greatest movies of all time.
52 is pretty good.
Unranked on the 10th anniversary update.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 52 is not too bad. I appreciate it for some parts, but I don't know if I'd put it up quite that high for me. But there's some big names in this movie, and they have some really iconic images as well.
Give me some names.
Burt Lancaster, our first and maybe only Burt Lancaster movie. He was known kind of as a tough guy with a tender heart, portraying a lot of, that's what Wikipedia had that quote on him. Portraying a lot of those kinds of roles. He had 4 Academy Award nominations, only 1 win. Lots of political activism in the civil rights movement, and he stood up against the House of Un-American Activities Committee. So really principled guy, very politically involved for a lot of different causes. The thing that I know him from is might be the thing you know him from. Field of Dreams. He was Moonlight Graham, the old version of him, of Dr. Moonlight Graham.
Oh yeah, it's the only thing I've ever seen him in.
Yeah, that was his final film role. Also in this movie, Deborah Kerr, who holds the record for most Academy Award nominations for Best Actress with no wins.
Wow, that's a bad record.
Right, she had 6 nominations and didn't win anything. So she's one of the main leads in this movie. And then Frank Sinatra's in this movie.
Who?
Old Blue Eyes. Very famous singer and many classic standards such as Summer Wind and My Way.
Yeah.
Other things. but this was kind of his comeback. He had kind of fell off the pop culture landscape, and this role was kind of his comeback. He wins a supporting actor Oscar for this movie.
Wow.
And of course, the most notable thing about it probably is that Frank Sinatra in this movie is rumored to be the inspiration for the character of Johnny Fontaine in The Godfather, and the horse's head in the bed of the studio producer, that this was apparently something that maybe Frank Sinatra they got his mafia connections and
he got this role because of that.
And bullied the studio head into getting it for him.
Wow. Well, he did a good job. Hopefully no horses lost their heads for this, but you know, he's in it. His career, it's history. His career definitely turns back around after this, and he does a good job. I think without spoiling too much, I think it warrants at least a nomination for Best Supporting Actor.
Right. And the other name is Donna Reed.
Oh, we know her.
Yeah. She was in It's a Wonderful Life, and she comes back for this movie. Well, that's all I have before going into the movie. I just wanted to kind of touch. I didn't want to do a deep dive into any one person in particular, really. I just kind of wanted to, hey, there's a lot of big names in this.
So it's From Here to Eternity. I think it's based on a book, right?
It is based on a novel.
And is it shot all on location? It's like,
I think so.
Okay. So the way I looked at it is like it's Pearl Harbor, but not Michael Bay.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor probably tried to do something like this.
Yeah, not as well, I don't think.
Right. Okay. But yeah, this is set in 1941 in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And the most famous part of it, well, we'll talk about that when we talk about the movie, I guess. Should we talk about the movie?
Yep, that's what we're here to do.
Okay. We see some soldiers drilling over the opening credits, and I wanted to kind of say that they had military involvement in this movie. They had an advisor that was a part of the United States military, and this might be the first movie on the list that we've talked about that had involvement from the official involvement from the United States military, and there are moments in which this leads to some changes in how some of the characters act so as to not portray the military in a bad light.
Interesting.
Yeah, so sometimes basically there are some bad people in this movie and they will do some terrible things, But it's kind of made out intentionally to be kind of they're a bad apple as opposed to the whole system is kind of rotten. So,
but the saying is if you have one bad apple, you throw out the whole bunch. Is that? I'm pretty sure.
Well, then there's also the one you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't know. Okay, so there's whatever. A lot of competing. So, yeah, but that's, I was reading about that and that how that might have had a change in some of the characterizations in this movie and things. And so maybe the book's a little bit more explicit about some of this stuff.
Huh.
But we are at Schofield Barracks in Hawaii, 1941, and we meet Private Robert E. Lee Pruitt, played by the returning Montgomery Clift.
Oh, yeah, you didn't say his name. He's awesome.
Yeah, because we had seen him before. But yeah, he's one of the leads in this movie, and he's great. I love Montgomery Clift, actually. He's very handsome. He's very much different actor than a lot of the other actors we've seen of this era.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites so far from this decade.
Mm-hmm. And he arrives to check in after he's been transferred from another camp or base, and he bumps into his friend, Private Angelo Maggio. That's Frank Sinatra.
Oh, yeah. Italiano is what his name is, essentially.
Yeah, he's very Italian. His character is very Italian.
Stereotype.
Yeah. Pruitt goes inside. He starts playing some pool until he gets interrupted by another main character here, Sergeant Milton Warden, played by Burt Lancaster. He's got a very strong jaw.
Yep. Manly man.
Yeah, Manly Manderson. Pruitt is sensitive man. And
his racist first name, Sensitive Man.
Right. And then Maggio is Italian man.
Mafia horse in the bed. Yes. Got it. Okay. We got the main characters.
And so we learn that basically Milton Warden is effectively in charge because his boss is named Captain Dana Holmes. He's basically not present much. He is often going off drinking and fraternizing with women and doesn't really care too much about the leadership. He's often just kind of delegating things to Burt Lancaster's character. And so that's just a little bit about kind of the structure, leadership structure of this camp. And it definitely comes up in a number of the ways that the characters interact. There's not too much to the Captain Dana Holmes character as a character for himself. It seems like most of his things are so other characters like Burt Lancaster and Deborah Kerr have wrinkles to their character.
Yeah, you know? He's a plot device.
Yes, exactly. The Captain Holmes is really concerned with boxing and the reputation of the boxing team. And apparently he kind of often gives promotions for if you're successful in boxing. And we learn that Pruitt was a great boxer, but he's refusing to box. We don't know why at the moment, but we later learn that it's because he was sparring with a friend of his and accidentally seriously injured his friend while sparring, and he feels really guilty about it, and he's kind of vowed to never do it again.
Yeah, it's not the worst reason to quit.
No, it makes sense. But Montgomery Clift, isn't he just great at playing that kind of sensitive, soft-spoken person? It's very similar to his character in A Place in the Sun, I think.
Yeah.
In that regard.
Yeah, no, he's good. He's got a reason. He's got to hold it back. He's lying about something.
Yeah, but he's very principled and he's very consistent in it, and he's not going to bow down to intimidation or pressure. And that's basically his character for the rest of the movie is going to get crapped on by pretty much everybody.
Yep.
As Warden is taking Pruitt back to his bunk, we meet Karen Holmes, played by Deborah Kerr. She is the captain's wife. She kind of arrives and walks past them, and they stare, and we see that the warden is interested. So much so that he's talking to another soldier, and this other soldier shares stories about Karen Holmes, that she's basically been sleeping around with other soldiers at a different base when they were stationed over there. So we get a little bit of a sense. We don't know at this point if it's rumor or, gossip or if it's, true or not, but it's kind of scandalous. And there is some scandalous stuff alluded to in this movie that we've definitely seen before. They kind of always dance around these kinds of subjects, whether it's, premarital sex or...
No, she's cheating on him for sure.
Oh, no, they are direct about it. And I think it's the very next scene. We see Captain Holmes and his wife, Karen, at home, and they're talking about... It sounds like they basically have an understanding that they know that both of them are cheating on each other. Like, we're not going to be... It's like we'd be dumb if we didn't acknowledge this kind of a thing. We both know what the other person's doing. It's almost kind of like I don't know if they're okay with it, but they're at least... They're not comfortable with it, but they're at least...
aware.
Aware, and they're not going to, like... They're not fighting against it, you know?
Yeah.
They know that their relationship kind of has largely died, basically.
My husband's off somewhere and it's raining outside and we're both drinking now. You probably only got one thing wrong. The lady herself. The lady's not what she seems.
The next thing we see is Pruitt's getting harassed by some soldiers for not joining the boxing team. And they're kind of really laying into him. And he's getting what they kind of refer to in the movie as the treatment. I don't know. It's basically just... hazing or bullying, but it's accepted by the leadership and ordered by the leadership in a lot of instances. And he's basically harassed, he's made to run extra laps and stuff and punished for not falling in line, but he never gives in, he never lets up, and that's just kind of who he is. I think he just really you know, loved his friend and is really sad that he was responsible for what happened to him, and he's punishing himself, kind of, I think, in a lot of respects, and he's just gonna take it no matter what they dish out at him.
Yeah, because he's not gonna break, and they just really want him to box. Essentially what I got from this whole thing is that he was transferred here to box, and then he's like, I don't want to box. And it's right before Pearl Harbor, and he's just gonna hold out and keep on saying, I don't want to box. And then he finds his buddy, his friend here soon, right?
Maggio?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they he takes Pruitt to a club, and it's basically a whorehouse.
Mm-hmm.
It's like women that are there that are paid to keep company for the soldiers. And in the book, it is a whorehouse. And Pruitt meets Lorene Burke, who is Donna Reed, at this clubhouse. And yeah, in the book, her character is... definitely a prostitute, but in the movie she's just an employee of this place that is basically there to flirt with men. But that's as far as they go in the movie. It's pretty obvious that they kind of get smitten with each other pretty off the bat. And Maggio meanwhile is getting more and more drunk, and he encounters a man that they call Fatso playing the piano, and that's Ernest Borgnine, who's a kind of famous, pretty famous actor. Right now I can't think of something off the top of my head that maybe I would have recognized him in elsewhere, but if you saw his picture, you know who he is.
He's not very fat, I don't think.
He's big, though.
He's big, but I don't think he's like a big fat guy.
Yeah, it's just they call him Fatso, and he will refer to Maggio as the racial slur of a WOP. An Italian racial slur. I actually found some like YouTube videos as I was going back through where they cut that part out. They remove that, they drop the audio out during the clips from that. A lot of people like find that pretty offensive. And they nearly come to blows. They nearly start fighting, but it's kind of broken up. And there's a big thing that's happening with Warden and Karen, meanwhile, during all of this. He goes to visit Karen at the captain's home in the rain.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, it's just like, aren't you going to invite me in? Aren't you going to give me a drink? Kind of a thing. And eventually, he's kind of pushing boundaries, testing boundaries kind of thing. And eventually, they kiss. And so, while Pruitt and Maggio are at this club... visiting with Lorene, and Maggio's getting into fights with Fatso, Warden and Karen go to the beach. And here is the most famous shot of the movie that everybody knows, I feel like, even if you don't even know this movie. They're at the beach, the camera's following on the waves crashing, and then it turns and follows the waves as they come to the shore. And there's Burt Lancaster and Deborah Kerr making out on the beach as they're lying down in the sand as the wave kind of crashes over them.
I never knew it could be like this. Nobody ever kissed me the way you do.
Nobody?
No, nobody.
It's probably one of the most famous images of like all of romance in Hollywood.
Yeah, it is pretty famous. It's like not the most famous beach scene ever. I mean, I don't know. It's recognizable.
Planet of the Apes ending might be a more famous beach scene. Yeah. Saving Private Ryan's intro might be a more famous beach scene. I'm trying to think of other famous beach scenes.
I don't know. I'm sure that there's others, but it's cool. You see it on supercuts a lot, but
a lot. Yeah, it's in montages all the time. Mm-hmm. And it just looks cool. I like how the camera whips around and kind of follows the wave, and then you're surprised by them kind of laying on top of each other in the sand there. And it's really dynamic and fast. A lot of this movie's pretty slow. In terms of, I think the camera tends to be a little, I don't know, it tended to be pretty still for the most part, and just a lot of people talking, kind of slow romance building kind of looks and things like that. But then the camera just kind of whips around here. There's two moments in this movie where the camera feels a lot more dynamic. It's this scene and it's the ending of the movie that I was like most aware of camera technique, camera movement, blocking, things like that. And so and it's just such an iconic image and it's so striking. It's definitely worthy of being discussed, and probably one of the big reasons why it's on the list to begin with.
Yeah. But anyway, so they're cheating on the beach and the waves crashing down on them, and then there's a fight about to break out in the whorehouse, and
So things are building, and I think it's in the scene where she mentions to Warden to basically encouraging him to become an officer, because once he's an officer, she can divorce Holmes and then they can get married. I don't know why he has to be an officer for that to happen. I wasn't really following that. But he's not really quite on... He doesn't look like he's quite on board with that plan at this moment. But, you know, then back at the base, they continue giving Pruitt crap for not boxing. And then there's a kind of cool moment where some soldiers are in the barracks and they're singing a song called Reenlistment Blues.
Oh, yeah, they play a lot of blues here. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's
pretty good guitar player, and then he's a harmonica player. No, he's a trumpet player, a bugler. That's what Clift is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we find that out in the very next scene. They go out to a club, and he gets a bugle and starts playing the blues at this club, and everyone's kind of gathered around and listening to him soulfully playing the bugle to the this blues song, and everyone starts applauding, and then Fatso comes back into the club and gets into a fight with Maggio, and they actually start swinging and hitting each other in this moment, and the tension's kind of built from just saying words and getting broken up, and now they're fighting, fists, you know, smacking each other.
You hit me!
Yeah, and I'm about to do it again, too.
And then Warden, who's there, comes in and breaks it up. So, slowly building this tension between Maggio and Fatso. But yeah, I love the song Reenlistment Blues, and I really like the bugle playing.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It's just an interesting character. He's a sensitive guy. He's artsy. And whenever he's playing, you can like the way he looks while he's playing it, he just looks soulful, like he kind of loses himself in it. I think it's effective, an effective performance when he's doing that. The next night off that they get, Pruitt goes to meet with Laureen, but Maggio's getting ready and he's the last one there. He's like dumping comical amounts of like powder on him so he doesn't
what
sweat
was up with that?
Yeah, he's like got this like baby powder stuff that he's pouring all over him. I guess it's so he doesn't sweat going out in Hawaii.
All over his body.
But yeah, this guy's like, you're the last one here, so I guess you got guard duty, so he doesn't get to go. But he ends up getting drunk and skipping out on guard duty and showing up at the club anyway. Pruitt tries to help his buddy out, but Maggio drunkenly gets into a fight and basically gets put in army jail.
Yeah. He gets put in army jail, and meanwhile, I think the wife and the not sergeant, they're heating things up, yeah?
Yeah. They kind of continuously meet, and he kind of meets with her again and tells her that he doesn't want to become an officer, and I think they kind of call off the relationship for the most part here.
She's like, I really like officers, and he's like, you mean the one you're cheating on? Like, that's not who I am. I don't want to be something I'm not.
Yeah, he's like, I never wanted to become an officer. I don't want to change who I am or what I want to do for this. Even as much as I like you, I'm not going to do that. And so she's hurt, but
whatever.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I guess this kind of ties in with my final thoughts a little bit on this movie. This movie's largely a romance set around this time frame, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I bought any of the romance. You know?
Yeah, no, not really. I bought a lot of the alcoholism.
Yeah.
And the racism and the fighting within the camp.
Yeah.
And then I was just kind of waiting for Pearl Harbor to hit and, mm-hmm. like, for the bombings to start.
And I think there's something to it that whenever you see Hawaii 1941 and you're sitting in the audience in 1953 in the movie theater, I think there's this kind of underlying dread and worry
mm-hmm.
underneath, like, oh, these people are just trying to live their lives, and then they don't even know what's coming,
mm-hmm.
kind of a thing. So we're a lot more removed from that, and we do expect that, but the people in the audiences in 1953 were directly impacted by this, you mm-hmm. know? And so that maybe made the movie hit a lot harder for that group.
Yeah, definitely did.
One of the boxers keeps hounding Pruitt until they get into a big fight that goes on for quite some time, and Pruitt actually fights back, and we can see that he is pretty good. And Holmes is just Captain Holmes is just standing there watching it, but he doesn't stop it. He lets it go on for quite a while, and then eventually steps in and tries to punish Pruitt for the fight, but the other soldiers all come to Pruitt's defense, saying it was the other guy that started everything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Holmes just wants to punish Pruitt because he's not going along with what he wanted. He does not join in the boxing thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to open themselves up to Pruitt. All these guys that started off giving him the treatment, all these, but they're, you know, he's a good guy. We saw him play the bugle. You know, we've hung out for him. We've got to know him a little bit. We're going to stand up and defend him. What we've been doing, what this unit is doing to him is not fair.
But then they keep doing it, don't they? Don't they punish him here and make him run a bunch?
Not at this point. The group is kind of done. They've stuck up for him. The next scene is they're outside and they're singing the re-enlistment blues again, but this time Pruitt's bugling on a little thingy.
On their mouthpiece.
The mouthpiece, yeah.
But when that happened earlier, I guess, they make him run and they keep making him run. He's like, I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to back down. I'm mm-hmm. not going to break and join the boxing thing.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. And then he still doesn't. He beats this guy up and he boxes really well and he's like, I'm still not going to join.
Exactly. Yeah, and I really like when they sing this re-enlistment blues again with him bugling throughout it. Again, it's just great camaraderie, bonding. I like bonding moments where it kind of, in a weird way, kind of reminds me of the scene in Jaws when they're underneath the boat and they're talking about their scars.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really have it much to do with the plot. It's just you can just see how the characters have changed and evolved. It's just where they're coming together. And this is, for me, these are the moments when the movie was at its best. And Warden is drunk, and he's been listening in while he's been drinking, and kind of has a smile on his face. And then Pruitt walks off and sits and chats with the drunk Warden, and they're kind of bonding a bit when an injured Maggio appears.
Well, yeah, because we forgot to say that the army jail warden or whatever. You keep saying warden or warden?
Warden is the guy's name.
Okay.
But then yeah, the
warden of the jail is Fatso that Maggio got the fight with, and he's been just beating him and, I don't know, doing what other terrible things to him, but mm-hmm. getting payback for him not liking his piano music or something like that. I don't know.
Right.
The racism and all mm-hmm. the violence and stuff in jail, and then Maggio escapes. The whole time he's in there, he's like, I'm going to escape. I swear I'm going to escape. I'm going to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And he does in this scene.
Yeah, he gets out. He's beat up. And so he's like, Fatso was beating me to death, And so he kind of gets in the back of a truck, hides under a tarp, and is able to escape. But that hit a bump, and he fell out the back and kind of got beat up real bad from that. And he's as he's telling Pruitt all this, he dies. Like Pruitt's holding him, and Maggio dies in Pruitt's arms.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of shocking. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
But Frank Sinatra's got a really great death scene. I think he does a really good job with his death acting.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty emotional.
They're going to send you to the stockade, bro.
No, they ain't going to send me to the stockade.
Watch out for Fatso. Watch out for Fatso. He'll try to crack you. And if they put you in a hole, don't yell. Don't make a sound. You'll still be yelling when they come to take you out. And just lay there. Just lay there.
The next day, Pruitt bugles, and he plays taps on the bugle for Maggio. And this is the best acting in the movie as he's playing it, and there's just tears silently streaming down his face as he keeps playing taps, and everyone recognizes what's happening, that Pruitt is the one that's playing, and they all kind of respectfully are quiet and allow him to play his song as he's honoring his dead friend. And I think everybody pretty much liked Maggio. So as they're all honoring their dead friend Maggio. Pruitt's not done honoring Maggio though, because the next thing he does is he runs into Fatso outside in an alleyway.
No, he finds him in the bar, and then he confronts him, and it's like,
let's take this outside kind of thing.
He's like, I don't like your music. And he's like, do you recognize that? Do you remember that? And he's like, yeah, I don't like your music. And then he's like, calls him Fatso, and he's like, hey, I don't like being called that. And he's like, hey, let's take this outside. And they go out there, and they have a knife fight.
Mm-hmm. And, West Side Story style.
Mm-hmm. It's in the little alley, and they have a knife fight, and then it ends with death behind boxes.
Yeah, they fall behind some boxes, and so you don't have to see Fatso's death. And Fatso comes back out, and he's got some blood on him, and then he falls down and dies, and then Pruitt stands up.
Yeah, Montgomery Clift did it again. He murdered somebody else, and now he's off on the run.
Yep. He runs off, and he hides at Loreen's, Donna Reed's place, and Warden actually covers for him. Every time they take roll and they're looking for this person, basically, he's like, yeah, he's present. Like, everyone's present and accounted for, and he's covering for him for an undetermined amount of time, but for a good number of days.
Mm-hmm.
And then one morning, they're on the base, and they hear some explosions from far away.
Well, no, they have a new... Don't they have a new guard that comes in, or is that at the very end?
Oh, I'm not certain. Sure, what's with the new guard?
Like the main, what's his face? The major gets sent away.
Oh, Captain Holmes?
Yeah.
He does. I think that is before this.
Yeah, that's before this, because there's like a whole cleaning out of all of these people that are essentially just in the army to win this boxing tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, this stuff's got to go.
We're not doing this. We're not running things this way.
Yeah, it's like the Fatso guy is just, he's dead, and then this other guy's dead, and this other guy's MIA, mm-hmm. and I think I've had enough of this. And so they like send in a new captain, and Warden's like maybe about to go off and do some further training to become a captain or to get higher rankings and stuff like that, and Montgomery right. Clift's getting crazier and crazier, hanging out at Donna Reed's, and he's just like reading the paper or something, I don't know, reading the news, and everyone's after him. They like mm-hmm. keep putting reports like the still no suspects on the dead fat guy behind the alley who turned out to be in the army.
Right.
And then yeah, it's like a quiet morning, and all this new guard is at the base, and they're like just eating breakfast and stuff and getting ready. And then here come the planes.
Yeah.
Early, early in the morning.
Mm-hmm. The Japanese Air Force is attacking, and it's the attack on Pearl Harbor. And There's a lot of, it looks like, real footage of planes flying, kind of interspersed. And the editing of this scene is, again, really dynamic. And you'll have planes swooping down and just firing their machine guns, and then soldiers falling. Warden kind of takes charge, and he gets the weapons and ammunition. The guy that's guarding, he's like, I need written approval. And they're like, take him. And, like, they, you know, he gets all these soldiers to kind of hold that guy so they can get in and get their guns. And he gets some soldiers up onto the roof to shoot down the planes. They're flying through the barracks and shooting at the soldiers. And
these are some of my favorite shots whenever they were, like, looking down at the barracks and there's a big field in the middle and everybody's mm-hmm. running around and laying down. It's cool.
Right. And they're up on the roof and they're firing every time a plane comes by, and they, you know, they're missing quite a bit and not doing enough damage. And eventually they shoot one down, and it feels triumphant. It feels like they're doing something. Instead of just kind of hiding and cowering, which is what a lot of them were having to do, because what are they going to do against these planes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Pruitt tells Loreen he's going back. And he's like, I got to go back. The attack, you know, I got to be with my men.
Mm-hmm.
And she begs him to go with her to the States instead so that they can get married. But he goes back. And I think before, Karen had a moment where she was talking with Warden on a bench and talking about how she's going to go back. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going.
So, yeah. He's like, I'm not getting the promotion. I don't like yeah. that. This is what I like to do.
But so Pruitt ends up trying to go back. And as he's running back to rejoin his comrades, some soldiers, because they've kind of amped up the guard presence on the base, as you might expect after being attacked.
Really quick, that was the weird thing with Warden and his wife cheating and everything. Was that, or no, he's cheating on the captain's wife, or with the captain's mm-hmm. wife. She was, like, encouraging him to get this promotion, and then she was like, my husband will give you the recommendation, and sure enough, like, he was like, of course, I'll send you up the ranks, I trust you, you're a good guy, you know, like, you're not ever gonna do anything bad, or anything like that, or cheat, cheat on my wife. Yeah, cheat on, yeah. But, it's dumb. And then finally he's like, no, yeah, I'm gonna stay, you can go back to the States, I'm not mm-hmm. yeah.
And so then Pruitt, same thing with Loreen, and he's like, nah, I gotta stay. And he's running back to rejoin his comrades, and some soldiers see him running and they call for him to halt. He doesn't, so they fire
mm-hmm.
and they shoot him dead. Pruitt dead. You know, like, did he die in a place in the... No, he gets he's off to get executed at the end of A Place in the Sun.
He does.
So he's dead, yeah. So we've seen him twice, and he's dead twice.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final little scene is all that's left, is we go to a boat that's heading from Hawaii back to the mainland, and Karen and Loreen bump into each other on the ship, and they kind of reminisce together about their lives on the island, and Karen's... gets ready, she tosses her lei into the ocean and says,
there's a legend. If they float in toward shore, you'll come back someday. If they float out to sea, you won't.
I think they're kind of going back, but it's, we never find out if they get back to the island.
Mm-hmm.
And Loreen says her fiance died during the attack on Pearl Harbor, which is a lie. And she then tells Karen his name, and Karen recognizes it and kind of recognizes that Loreen's been lying, but doesn't say anything, but she knows what's going on. And then the camera goes down to Loreen's hands, where she's holding on to the bugle mouthpiece of Pruitt. And we go to the leis floating in the ocean, and we fade out on that image, and that's the end of From Here to Eternity.
Yay!
So the reception of the movie, the reviews for the film at the time raved about this movie. It was the third highest grossing movie of the year. It gets nominated for 13 Academy Awards. Best Actor for Montgomery Clift and Burt Lancaster. Best Actress for Deborah Kerr. Best Costume Design and Best Score. And it wins 8 Academy Awards. Best Picture. Best Director for Fred Zinnemann. Best Supporting Actor for Frank Sinatra. Marking his comeback. Best Supporting Actress for Donna Reed. Best nice. Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best Editing, and Best Sound Recording. I think that it's very deserving of the cinematography, the editing, and the sound recording, especially for the Pearl Harbor sequence. The American Film Institute, like I said, has it ranked as the number 52 greatest movie of all time, and has it ranked as the number 20 best romance movie of all time. And that's all I got before we kind of wrap up what our thoughts are on the movie and what we think makes it great.
Yeah, I think that Frank Sinatra's method acting and playing a really, really good drunk. I think
he had to get into character a lot.
He does a good job in this movie playing drunk. He's a great supporting actor. The cast was really good, and then the cinematography really good. And I guess the recency effect of, you know, being just 12 years after Pearl Harbor really, really made it a big deal back then. I think it's a pretty darn good Pearl Harbor movie. yeah, no, it was fun. It was fun. I really like Montgomery Clift.
Me too.
But I see how it fell off the top 100 and the 10-year anniversary.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Overall, my personal thoughts on this movie is I don't know if I'd watch it again. I think it's kind of middling for me. There are parts of it that feel dated. But from the eyes of, you know, for the podcast and trying to understand what makes it great or what someone might say about what makes it great to be included on a list like this, I would probably say the nuanced and the performances for a lot of the lead actors, you know, Montgomery Clift for sure, Burt Lancaster, I thought too, Deborah Kerr was great, Donna Reed, Frank Sinatra, I think all of them were really solid performances, especially for the time. They had a lot more complex character motivations, I think. There was that kind of slowly unraveled over the time. We got to learn a little bit more why Pruitt was so stubborn with his beliefs and what was going on for Deborah Kerr. I think there was an allusion to she had some sort of accident where she lost a child.
Hmm.
And maybe that cause was some of the cause for the distance between her and Captain Holmes and her husband, and maybe opened, you know, led to some of the, you know, seeking relationships outside of their relationship.
Hmm.
And Holmes's drinking and detachment and things like that. So, then of course, you know, Donna Reed is always great in everything I've seen her in, and Sinatra was great too. But like I said, the dynamic shooting and the sound design, especially during the Pearl Harbor attack sequence, was really great. You've got that famous shot on the beach, iconic. I can see the appeal for the time. I don't really think it stands the test of time too much, though, for me.
Hmm, yeah. Same. I agree. That was pretty good, though. What's on the docket for next week, do you know?
Yes, next time we are going to 1954 and a very high-ranking movie. We're going to see our second Marlon Brando movie, our second Elia Kazan movie, On the Waterfront from 1954,
oh, cool.
Ranked number 8 on the original list and number 19 on the 10th anniversary list.
Wow, okay. I've only seen this one once, and I don't think I paid attention to it except for the famous line.
Me too. Yeah.
So this will be exciting. I'll see if I can remember what the heck happens.
Yeah. So don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, leave a review. That's how more people can find us. Share it with your friends and family. We really appreciate that. But for this time, my name is Andy Fernandez.
And my name's Michael Fernandez. Thank you guys for joining us on What Makes It Great.